This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Essentially, 12 major cities have all committed to buying only battery electric and or other zero emission buses from 2025 onwards.
As many of us prepare for the hectic holiday hustle of planes, trains, and automobiles, we might be thinking about how our travel plans are going to increase our carbon footprints. Fortunately, there are important strides being made to electrify these modes of transportation. This week on Sea Change Radio, we hear from tree hugger Sammy Grover, who gives us a peek into two projects coming out of the UK. One will allow jets to use less fuel and emit less carbon, and the other enables trains to stop spewing dirty diesel. We talk with Grover about the current state of these technological innovations, discuss how private and public sectors are working to foster innovation, and look at other movements toward electric transit happening around the globe. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Sammy Grover. He's a writer at treehugger.com. Sammy, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you.
I've been reading your work for many years now, so it's a delight to have you on the show. Your last two pieces at Treehugger focused on some pretty interesting leaps that are happening in the transportation sector as battery storage begins to expand. Why don't you explain the first one on the hybrid plane breakthrough?
My take on electric transportation has always been we better electrify cars as quick as possible because we're going to be flying in, you know, liquid-fueled planes for many, many years to come. There just isn't the energy density, right, and that we need to be able to fly. That's how I'd always understood it, but it turns out I'm kind of behind the times, is that there's several startups that are looking at electric passenger flight. Some are saying within the next decade. One particular startup is looking at electric commercial sort of short to medium haul flights by 2022 between sort of regional airports in the US. But this particular project it seems to be sort of further along than most. It's a demonstration project right now, but I believe it's a partnership between Airbus, Rolls-Royce, and Siemens. It's called the EFAN X, and it's essentially it's a standard airplane with four gas-powered turbines. One of those turbines is going to be replaced by a 2 megawatt motor, essentially, and on board there's going to be 2 megawatts of battery storage and then a 2 megawatt generator. So essentially what you've got is as far as I understand it, it's a electric hybrid commercial aircraft, and the plan, according to the press releases that the project was putting out, is, as you know, as they prove feasibility and as they prove safety and performance, the plan is to replace a second of those motors with a second of the turbines with a second 2 megawatt motor. And I've read some of the other blogs that were reporting on the same project essentially are arguing that, you know, the ultimate game plan is, as battery storage gets cheaper and all of these improvements keep happening, there's nothing really to stop them going from 2 to 3 or even 4 electric motors, which is essentially, you know, you would eventually have a 100% electric commercial aircraft, which kind of blew my mind. I moved into the house I currently live in 5 years ago, and I nearly lost it when I saw a Chevy Volt over the road. And things have moved so fast that now we're looking at, you know, electric flight not being these sort of weird hobby projects of one guy trying to fly around the world in these tiny little gliders, but actually looking at serious transportation options in the not too distant future.
You say, I'll quote, "The European Commission's Flight Path 2050 vision for aviation, which includes a reduction of CO2 by 75% and reduction of nitrous oxide by 90% and noise reduction by 65%. So why don't you explain what this 2050 vision for aviation means? Does this have to do directly with just this battery project, or is this a mandate that the European Commission has put out in general?
I think it's a set of goals that the European Commission has put out. I'm not sure if they're a mandate or if they're legally enforceable, or whether it's like a lot of these things where it's sort of a stated ambition between the industry and regulators. As awareness rises and as the feasibility of electric transport gets better, I can only imagine the pressure to cut back on emissions is going to increase. And presumably, that initially at least, you'll look at something like these hybrid planes, which might be able to taxi on electric. They might do takeoff and landing on electric. And I say all this as someone who doesn't know a lot about aviation, so take it with a pinch of salt. But as you know, as battery technology gets cheaper and cheaper, they'll be able to do more and more of a particular flight using purely electric propulsion.
So I guess my question, based on this flight path 2050 vision, was: did you get any information on how far EFAN X will bring airplanes to become closer to meeting this goal? What kind of impact would it mean immediately to add an electric engine, this 2 megawatt engine, to a airplane?
I don't know the specifics of the emission savings. I would imagine it's at least 25%, right? As if you replace one turbine with one motor. But I cannot be certain about that.
The EFAN X isn't the first of its kind, is it?
No, it's not. I know for sure there was a previous EFAN plane that is sort of, I believe, a two-seater kind of personal transportation plane. And the press release materials they put out was referring to several other projects, Cree, I believe. And then there are also several other startups that are working alongside the EFAN X project. I know JetBlue and Boeing have backed a company called Zunum, which is looking at this idea of electric flight from regional airports to regional airports. So kind of circumnavigating this sort of hub and spoke model we've got for many of the major carriers now. The idea would be that you can use your local airport that's woefully underused right now, much easier access, probably less of a drive to get there, and you'll be able to fly from, say, you know, Burlington, North Carolina to, you know, I don't know, Dayton, Ohio or somewhere, using pure electric flight within the next 10 years.
Really? Would those planes be commercial or just private planes?
The claim they're making is that there will be small passenger jets. Yes, I'm not quite sure how many seats. I think if I'm remembering rightly, it might be 30 to 40 seats.
That's not insignificant.
No, it's not. No,
smaller commuter flights,
particularly for these smaller routes. Yeah, and I know EasyJet, which is one of the big sort of low cost carriers in the UK, is also has made a stated goal that they are planning on electric commercial flights on routes like Edinburgh to Bristol or London to Paris. So you're talking sort of maybe an hour, hour and a half flight. They're talking about that being feasible within the next 10 years or so.
So Sammy, is the battery itself larger and have more power, or is it able to store more energy? Maybe you can kind of break down what the leap is in battery technology over the last few years that has allowed us to see electric flights as a reality.
On the most basic level, my understanding is, one, that batteries have gotten cheaper, and secondly, they've gotten denser. So there's more energy per square foot, if you like, or per unit of weight. So that's why, as you're looking at sort of some of the electric cars that have been coming out too, is that you're getting much larger battery packs in terms of capacity, but within the same physical space. The new Nissan Leaf, for example, I believe the battery pack is actually the same physical size as my, you know, 2013 Nissan Leaf, but it'll go pretty much twice as far. And I think that presumably, particularly with flight, that's a particular concern, right? Is that you've got a limited amount of space and these things have to literally defy gravity, right? I know that was a big concern when Elon Musk has talked a lot about commercial electric flight, and he has been saying that there'll be this tipping point, right, where and I don't actually know where battery technology is right now, but his statement was that about 400 watt hours per kilogram is the point where a commercial electric flight will really take off.
Follow the shift to sustainability with SeaChange Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on SeaChange Radio. I'm speaking to Sammy Grover. He is a writer and contributor to treehugger.com. So, Sammy, we've been talking about these breakthroughs in the battery space and how it's translated into cleaner transportation. You also just wrote a piece entitled A Modular Rehabbed Battery Electric Train. Why don't you walk through the basics of this new type of train? Why is this different from like an electric rail car?
Yeah, so this was a really cool project. I had no idea this was going on. I found it through, there's a YouTube show called Fully Charged by a guy called Robert Llewellyn in the UK, which if your listeners aren't following, they ought to be following, they ought to be subscribing, and you can throw him a few bucks on Patreon as well if you can. So Robert went and visited a company called Viva Rail. They're based in the UK. And what they've been doing is taking old Bombardier kind of regional trains and rehabbing them to bring them up to spec for sort of current standards in terms of what the rail carriers in the UK are looking for passenger trains. So all new interiors, they look to all intents and purposes like a modern passenger train. And where their innovation lies is they've got this modular drivetrain system where essentially you can switch out a diesel generator for a battery pack, or use a combination of the two, and each of these units fits in the same space underneath the train. So if a carrier wants to start with diesel and then switch over to electric, they can do that. If they want to go all electric from the start, they can do that too. And these can be taken in and out as you know. You can take one power source out and put another one in, depending on your needs and the distance the train needs to travel, that kind of thing.
So Viva Rail is very flexible in terms of what types of trains it can be applied to. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's my understanding of it. And I think the reason why it's so exciting, particularly in the UK, is that so much of our trains in the UK are still run on diesel. So the tracks are not electrified. And many of these regional sort of rural train lines, I'm assuming it would cost an awful lot to electrify those tracks, and there isn't a lot of money in rail. You know, there's not a huge amount of ridership, and it's heavily subsidized by the government, and the current British government at least doesn't much like spending money on anything. So the idea that batteries have come down so far that you can literally just run an electric train on a regular old track that your diesel would have been running on is a very attractive proposition, from at least from this sort of outsider's perspective.
And that's because we wouldn't need to have a major infrastructure overhaul on those train lines with electricity added to it. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. So you know, on some of the main lines, I'm sure they're electrifying them in terms of either you'll have an electric rail like you might get on the subway system, or they'll have overhead electric lines. But that takes a huge investment, and this can be done train by train. you know, and even sort of part train by part train. So you can run it sort of on a diesel electric hybrid configuration, or you can run it fully electric if you need to.
So these battery packs can run a whole train? Are they enormous batteries, or are they just able to keep the train running after the fossil fuel engines get it started?
They can run a complete train if you configure them with the electric only options, then they will run a whole train. I don't have the numbers in front of me as to how big the battery packs are, but and range depends a lot on, you know, sort of what the route is and how many stops and all of that kind of thing. But yes, they will run a whole train.
And is this just a futuristic kind of idea still, or is Viva Rail in action? Can British train passengers ride trains that are being powered by Viva Rail type modular power sources?
Viva Rail is in action, exists, and is selling their trains. I do not know where you can get on one.
So you have private operators in the UK, and they're probably bidding and adding Viva Rail type electric battery packs to their current fleet?
Yeah, that's my understanding. And the way it's really worth going and checking out the fully charged video about the project. But the way their sales representative pitched it was that essentially the idea wasn't to create battery electric trains. The big idea for them when they started out was just this idea of modular power sources. And I think they themselves seemed very surprised by how quickly battery costs have come down, largely because of the innovation in the automotive industry. And they've come down to the point where it really sounds like that's their main gig now, is they're going to be focusing on the battery electric trains as a certainly a major part of their offering, if not their primary offering.
And I read about JR, Japan Railway, which is the largest rail system in Japan. They have a small two-car train that runs in Kyushu that's I think purely electric as well. I don't know if it uses something similar to Viva Rail's technology. So that, I guess that's a Hitachi train. I don't know if the Hitachi has used similar technology to Viva Rail, but we're always way behind in terms of rail technology here in the U.S. Are there any similar electric trains on the horizon that you're aware of, Sammy?
I'm not. I mean, I've heard people talking a lot about sort of, I forget the term, they're using something like a road train or something. Essentially, they were talking about a bendy bus, and they were describing it like it's a train. It was a bus, but I know that particularly electric buses is one of the sort of the next areas where we're going to see, I think, a fairly rapid take-up of battery electric transportation. Just because the maintenance costs are so low and the running costs are so low compared to a diesel powered bus. So I don't know if you saw this article about 12 major cities. So let me see, who was it? It was London, Mexico City, Los Angeles, Seattle, I think Barcelona. I'm going to forget the rest, but essentially 12 major cities have all committed to buying only battery electric and or other zero emission buses from 2025 onwards.
Really?
This to me was like a huge deal when I saw it, right? I mean, it seems hugely ambitious when I walk around my town and I see all the diesel spewing out of every bus. And then about a week after I wrote about it, I heard about Shenzhen in China, which has, by the end of this year, there will be 100% electric bus fleet. So that's a city of, I think, 5-6 million people. I think 14,000 buses already on their roads that are 100% battery electric. That to me is insane, right? It's like sort of when we look around and I'm seeing a press release for Chicago adding 20 electric buses, or, you know, my airport's adding 2 electric buses, and these things, you know, me being a geek about this stuff, I get very excited. And then I look at Shenzhen and they're just like, yeah, we're pretty much done with the transition already.
It's incredible. And you write, at the end of your hybrid plane piece you wrote, you kind of cracked, but who needs big government? And you can see the difference between when you have a national push to make these things a reality as opposed to what we have here, which is state by state. And we don't have national leadership right now in the clean energy space the way we did a year ago.
Yeah, it's very frustrating to me. I'm not, you know, well, I mean, I was raised somewhat like a social democrat, let's put it that way. But I try to think in terms of what's the problem and how do we solve it. Sometimes government's the best, you know, the best sort of actor within that. And sometimes the private sector is. And sometimes it's, you know, some combination of the two.
It looks like this is a combination of the two, but government is definitely playing a role in some of these larger efforts.
Absolutely. And government always does. And when we choose to say government isn't going to play a role, well, guess what? Government's then picking a winner just by not playing a role, right? Because you're placing a vote in favor of the incumbent, which, by the way, sort of came to be the incumbent through massive government subsidy. So, you know, if we build the interstate system and we subsidize oil and gas exploration, then why the heck wouldn't we subsidize the next, you know, the next generation of innovation that's going to improve everybody's lives, you know, save lives in terms of the air pollution issues that I referred to earlier. You know, it just seems like a no-brainer to me. Now, of course, a city like Shenzhen has an advantage is that they're also, I believe, their home base for BYD, which is one of the biggest electric bus manufacturers in the world. So they're not doing it entirely out of altruism either, but neither should they be.
We are riding now on a railroad, singing someone else's song. We've been standing by the crossroads. Take your side and step along. We are sailing away on a river to the sea. And maybe you and me will meet again. Whoa, we've been riding now on a singing someone else's song, sing along.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Sammy Grover. He is a writer and contributor to treehugger.com. So maybe you can speak to the promise that Tesla offers in terms of its combination of their solar play with Solar City and their electric vehicles, both cars and trucks, on the horizon. What kind of role do you think the government will play in enabling companies like Tesla to blossom?
That's a really good question. I think it's like a two-part question, right? The first is sort of what role do companies like Tesla play in shaping how we think about the challenges, right? So what Tesla's, I think, certainly successfully done is get people to rethink what a company is, right? So if you look at recent announcements from Nissan, from Ford, from some of the other big car companies, they're also sort of positioning themselves as sort of access to transportation companies, right? So they're getting into ride sharing. I believe Nissan's getting into home battery storage, solar, you know, all of these other things. I think Tesla has successfully managed to shift that playing field, right? Whether they manage to stay out in front once these other companies get serious about playing that kind of role will be interesting to see, right? And whether these companies are serious about getting serious about playing that role is the other big question, because they've got a lot of money invested in the sort of the status quo in terms of manufacturing assets and all of that stuff. In terms of what role the government plays, you know, it'll depend from country to country. I think we're getting to a point where, you know, like right now as we're recording this, the Senate just passed the tax bill, and there's big question marks about whether the electric vehicle subsidies are going to be on the chopping block or not. And probably 4 or 5 years ago, I would have worried that would be the end of electric cars, right? Or at least a major setback. Right now, I'm not really sweating it, because you've got so much going on internationally
And you've gotten to a point where a lot of these manufacturers, Tesla was going to run out of their allocated credits within the next year or so anyway, just because they'd sold too many cars to be able to qualify. So I do think we're getting to a point where the clean tech sectors in general are somewhat inoculated from the kind of what my friend in the solar industry refers to as the solar coaster. You know, so the subsidies come, subsidies go, regimes come, regimes go. And it's been sort of an up and down ride for a long time. Now you're looking at companies in the UK that are building essentially or talking about building subsidy free solar, which is, you know, again, unheard of 5 years ago. And once you combine battery storage with that, you're improving the economics of all of these things and reducing the reliance on things like feed-in tariffs. So I'm not minimizing the importance of politics, because the fact is we need to be going faster than we already are to sort of head off the worst of climate change.
And you can also assume that it's going to be cut. If it's a good thing, it's probably not going to be in the tax bill. This thing seems like it's gone off the rails. So.
Yeah, I might be revealing my biases, but I'm going to agree with you there. Yeah, but I do think we, you know, what role government plays within that is, you know, is also to think which governments, right? Because city governments are playing a big role in terms of around the world. There are various bans on diesel cars, bans on gas cars coming down the line, sort of low emission zones, ultra low emission zones. Atlanta just mandated that all new public development, so residential and commercial developments, need to be EV ready. So that doesn't mean that all of them are going to have electric vehicle chargers, but you've got to lay the conduit and you've got to put in space within the breaker box to be able to put an electric vehicle charger. There's all these little things that are going on that I think will continue to just make it easier and easier to make a choice. And in a lot of these things, that the new technology is just simply better. I mean, let's say 3-4 years ago, I was driving, my family had two gas cars. Now we got two plug-in vehicles. One is a plug-in hybrid and one is a fully battery electric vehicle. And we love them. I mean, I haven't filled up at the gas station in, I think, 2.5 months. And yes, I do that because it's an environmental statement on my behalf, but I also do it simply because they're nicer to drive, they're less hassle. I don't have to go and get an oil change as often. Like, what's not to like, you know?
Sammy Grover is a writer for Tree Hugger. Sammy, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Well, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Mansa, Paul Pena, and James Taylor.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.